From NPR, this is Hearing Voices.
Welcome to Word Shakers, a Hearing Voices poetry special, supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the National Endowment for the Arts. I'm Andrei Codrescu of The Exquisite Corpse, a journal of letters and life. Thomas Edison recorded poetry as soon as he had his wax cylinders in a row. He could have recorded politicians or animals first, but he chose poets. After poets, he recorded politicians and animals. The recordings are not easy to understand because in addition to the shaky technology, Sir Lord Alfred Tennyson had the habit of banging his fist on the podium after every line. The cylinder jumped. Tennyson screamed his poems because the poetry public expected histrionics, high drama, and more emotion than reason can withstand. Poets saw themselves as the secret legislators of the world, to paraphrase Coleridge, and that meant that they were profound, thought deeper than the philosophers and the theologians, and were more emotional about these things than all those other professionals. That hasn't changed.
Happening, happening, happening on earth, all in the valley of death robed. Over the light brigade, march to the country net, into the valley of death robed. Over the light brigade, was there a man dismayed, not though the soldier knew someone of them. There's not to make reply, there's not to reason why, there's but to do and die. Into the valley of death, death robed is it under. Cannon to right of them, cannon to left of them, cannon in front of them, volleyed and thundered. Some that was shot and shell, boldly they rode and well. Into the jaws of death, into the mouth of hell, robed is it. I thank you for showing me this miraculous invention.
Walt Whitman, the Daddy O of American poetry, was scheduled by Thomas Edison for a studio session.
Mary.
This may be it.
Center of equal daughters, equal sons, all alike and good.
Some folks say that it's not Edison technology, but it sure sounds like Whitman to me. How do I know? I hear Whitman in my dreams, that's how. I also hear Allen Ginsberg, and via Ginsberg, Blake. And they all send me back to Whitman.
Grow and grow, young or old, strong, ample, fair, enduring, capable, rich, perennial, with the earth, with freedom, law, and love.
Just gonna read this one poem I got in here called Poetry. Because poets just write about poetry, you know, that's all they know. Let's see. My name is Andrei Codrescu. We are on Frenchman Street in New Orleans at Cafe Marigny, one of my favorite restaurants where they do the local stuff pulled straight out of the ground. So this one is called Poetry. Poetry is a discourse, and we, it's discouragees. It's a funny word, I made that up, discouragees. I always liked that word. I never used it again, but I plan to use it in conversation in the next few days. Look at somebody interesting and say, are you a discouragee? referring to world events. Poetry is a discourse, and we, it discourages. If it's a worldwide depression, everybody is depressed. Ah, but try to run a gypsy through the ruins of time. I always like the line because I pretty much had a gypsy life, and the way this gypsy in this poem escapes time and the ruin of it and the ruin of the body and the ruins that people make is just to flee as quickly as possible. So it's a little, you know, silly. This sort of Victorian 19th century image of sort of the fleeting Arab through the sands of time, you know. There's sort of I just discovered this. I never thought it sounded like that, but try to run a gypsy through the ruins of time. My publisher says, at some people's readings, the crowd goes out and buys their books. At yours, they run out and steal them. Yeah, this is, I was living in California, and City Lights bookstore always ran out of my book, and I kept complaining about it, and she, the then manager, said, I can't order that book anymore, it gets stolen too fast. So I said, well, is that my fault? I'm popular, so you better get some more, she. Well, I probably stole about half of them because it would be a great occasion for picking up girls, because I would see beautiful, melancholy, doe-eyed women in the poetry section looking at books, and then I'd say, you know, I wrote this book, and she'd say, oh, no kidding. And I said, yeah, no, I'll get it for you, and then I'll put it under my arm and wait for her outside. I could never afford it. My publisher says, at some people's readings, the crowd goes out and buys their books. At yours, they run out and steal them. Why would they want to steal the blackness of my dog, the mouth of my tomb? His body, full of morphine, expires on the cold cement floor of the jail. His cells are migrating. Adieu, dumb dog. Adieu, obnoxious individuality. I had a black Labrador retriever called Dubček, and he died, chased one car too many and died, and I was sad. And so I thought, because all my poems, I mean, in a way, they don't deal with cheerful matter. They're really rather somberly horrific, but people find them funny. So I said, yeah, well, people want to steal my book, but what the hell they want to steal them? Because they're full of my dead dog feelings, you know? I mean, if they thought better about it, they wouldn't dig into this sort of dark matter of the universe, because it would make them instantly depressed, just like the world, you know? So this was written January 3, 1976. So I don't know if you remember, but it was a pretty terrible year. My friend Jeffrey Miller, who died actually in 1977 in a car accident, Jeffrey said about 1976, the mutants are massing in the country. So, this is where we lived. So, I lived in Monterio, California, which is this ratty town on the Russian River that had just refugees in it. Half the people in town didn't have phones, and the other half had their phones under other names because the law is after them. It's all full of dope dealers and the worst kind of hippies, country hippies, and some of the old-timers who shot at the hippies. Then about 1978, a gay invasion came to Sonoma County, and so the hippies and the old-timers got together and started shooting at the gays. And now it's sort of upscale, you know. So, but not Monterio itself. It's still like one of those criminally depressed river towns that burns down every few years, or the Hells Angels burn it down. Or nobody in Monterio knew what American money looked like because everybody used food stamps. Love that place. Yeah, that's the thing about poetry, you know. It's like volumes between every line. And it's not that you need to know, but you do suspect that it really is just kind of a simple interface, you know, for a much more complex reality. I mean, you're operating a code that's user-friendly, but actually behind it is all kinds of things like dead dogs and miserable river towns and girls who have books stolen for them, and you know, you name it. Oh man, here comes this amazing soup. You should taste it though. Everything they make here is like spectacular.
The secret. Two girls discover the secret of life in a sudden line of poetry. I, who don't know the secret, wrote the line. They told me through a third person, they had found it, but not what it was, not even what line it was. No doubt, by now, more than a week later, they have forgotten the secret, the line, the name of the poem. I love them for finding what I can't find, and for loving me for the line I wrote, and for forgetting it so that a thousand times till death finds them, they may discover it again in other lines, in other happenings, and for wanting to know it, for assuming there is such a secret, yes, for that most of all.
What is poetry? Is the answer hidden somewhere? Is it one of those answers locked in a box and nobody has the key? There are such questions and answers.
Oh, I read things as a boy that had mystery of sound and rhythm. Oh, I read things as a boy that had mystery of sound and rhythm. Walt Whitman, Edward Arlington Robinson, Robert Frost, Rachel Lindsay, Edgar Lee Masters. Hard to say how I moved into what I wrote that I termed poetry, but there's still argument about whether it is poetry or not.
Chicago poets. I saluted a nobody. I saw him in the looking glass. He smiled, so did I. He crumpled the skin on his forehead, frowning, so did I. Everything I did, he did. I said, hello, I know you. And I was a liar to say so. Complete poem by Carl Sandburg. Little girl, be careful what you say when you make talk with words, words.
Freedom and that other word, responsibility. You can't have one and not the other.
For words are made of syllables, and syllables, child, are made of air. Air is so thin. Air is the breath of God. Night bells. Two bells, six bells. Two bells, six bells. On a blue pavilion, out across a smooth blue pavilion. And between each bell, one clear cry of a woman. Lord God, you made the night too long, too long. It was something like this in the heart of the philosopher who declared, what can be explained is not poetry. What can be explained is not poetry.
My friend Alex Caldiero came by the other day.
What's going on?
He's a poet and a scholar, a man who knows every story that's ever been told, and usually he's in a good mood, making jokes, but this time he was looking like he'd just seen a ghost.
I don't know.
Or maybe he'd shot somebody.
You know, it's a sense of frustration. I apply for grants and I can't describe the categories. I can't fit the category.
He'd been turned down again by the Utah Arts Council.
You know, I sing and I'm not really a singer.
He's missed it 3 years in a row now.
You know, I do poetry and I'm not really a poet.
I know the director of the Arts Council, and he told me one reason Alex's proposals get rejected is because he won't call himself a poet. He makes up new categories, like word shaker and sonosopher. This confuses the selection committee. They give money to fiction writers, dancers, photographers. But what's a word shaker?
You know, they have to think in sound bites. They have to think in thought bites. And everything has got to be two-dimensionally stated. You know, and real art and real poetry is not like that.
Then, according to the director, there's also a problem of giving public money to individual artists, because the individual artists sometimes do things that upset the public. The director didn't come right out and say that maybe what Alex does upsets people, and maybe this isn't the problem at all. But in March, for example, for the anti-war protests on the steps of the state capitol, Alex put on a white gas mask and banged on a mortar shell with a stick and made gasping noises into the microphone while two women in blue Afghan burqas spun in circles, one to either side. It scared people. It scared me, and I knew he was going to do it. And he's right. I can't think what category to put that in.
You know, and so what's going on?
Here's an example of one of his poems.
This is a lie. This is a secret. This is a lie. This is a secret. This is classified. This is a lie. This is confidential. This is a secret. This is a lie. This is a lie.
Sometimes he speaks in tongues. Sometimes he sings.
The money's gone out the window. The monkey's walked out the door.
Sometimes he tells his dreams.
A dream, February 7th, 2001. I'm with George W. Bush, President of the United States of America. We are by a lake, and it is winter. Papa Bush is there, and Mama Bush is there. It's a family gathering, and I'm one of the family. We are all by a lake, and it's winter, and it's a Bush family tradition to play the diving game. So George, President W. Bush, gets up and dives into the icy water and goes down deep and then surfaces and leaps right onto the shore. That looks dangerous, I say. Why do you do it, George? He answers, you got to go in to get out.
I told Alex not to give up hope. Maybe next year. I said, you know, if you don't make up a new category, just call yourself a poet and propose something that sounds safe. No burqas, no gas masks. Maybe just say you're going to stay home and look at your belly button. But I doubt that's going to happen.
Nomenclature. Belly button is the U.S. military code name for the one who makes the decisions. Hence the phrases, he can't find his belly button. We don't know the belly button. There is no belly button. Where is my belly button? Etc.
This is Scott Carrier.
Johann Wolfgang von Goethe said he'd never had any peace. Well, what would it take to make a poet happy? Is anything ever enough? It's the question of fame. It's the question of fame. For an hour and a half you utter your elegant verse, in the packed soccer stadium in Santiago. Your poems are projected on dirigibles overhead. You're hooked up by satellite to 300 stadiums all over the world, and all of them are packed. It's the question of fame. Finally you finish, and 30 million people are on their feet. They're screaming and jogging in place. They clap for hours till their palms are covered with blood, and blisters pop painfully in their shoes. And soon they begin to thud to the bleachers like clapping colossi, like clapping colossi. They lie there hoarsely writhing, the hemus mist still spuming from along the edges of whacking fingers. Their eyes glazed over like 30 million raccoons in a sudden flashlight. This happens every Sunday afternoon, and it's still not enough. It's still not enough. This happens every Sunday afternoon, and it's still not enough. It's the question of fame.
That was Ed Sanders from his album Thirsting for Peace. Scott Carrier presented The Dilemma of Alex Caldiero. Denise Levertov read her poem The Secret. And Carl Sandburg's musings were produced by Barrett Golding, with music by Skyward. Coming up, we walk the streets of New Orleans, talking to a hot dog vendor, a barkeep, and a stripper. All of them darn fine poets. That's in a minute when we return with Word Shakers from HearingVoices.com, supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the National Endowment for the Arts.
You're hearing Voices from NPR. From NPR, this is Hearing Voices.
Poetic Terrorism. A group calling itself the Assault Poetry Unit dropped off an assortment of suspicious packages at various offices around New Orleans, including that of the Times-Picayune newspaper, which evacuated its employees. The package turned out to be a watermelon, with a four-page manifesto in it. The editor of the Times-Picayune was at the time deeply immersed in discussing the upcoming social season with the paper's gossip columnist. They were forced instead to huddle under a freeway overpass with the manifesto while the New Orleans Police Department bomb squad dismantled the watermelon. The manifesto called for painting over the huge Marlboro Man at Decatur Street and replacing it with a poem by Ishmael Reed. It called for all Louisiana government speeches to be written and read in iambic pentameter. And it demanded that New Orleans police officers memorize and recite poems at regular intervals. It was perhaps this, more than anything else, that caused the police to treat the incident as a crime. The manifesto declared that, quote, the era of poetic passivity is over, unquote, an egregious statement in a city where passivity, poetic or no, is a sacred institution, especially in the summer. We are so passive here that we never even shoo the flies away from our po'boys. Even the donkeys pulling the tourists quit flicking their tails this time of the year. Even more amazingly, no mayoral candidacies are declared at all, leaving the incumbent to take an unencumbered siesta. The energetic manifesto demanded, among yet more things, that the mayor read The Brown Menace, or Poem on the Survival of Roaches by Audre Lorde in its entirety on the 6 o'clock news. Now, if someone would dare to wake his honor up, that might solve the problem of what to put on the news, which has been all about how hot it is outside. Still, crime or no crime, you have to hand it to the assault poetry unit. They ambulate, they agitate, they say something. In New Orleans, as in the rest of America now, that's the height of social activism. That's from my book, New Orleans, Mon Amour. I'm Andre Codrescu of The Exquisite Corpse, and this is Word Shakers, a Hearing Voices poetry special. This 1920 recording of poet Vladimir Mayakovsky was mixed in 2004 with music by Yoshio Machida for DJ Spooky's project Rhythm Science.
At night I hear my dog bark, the wind blows my swing, my dad is snoring, my mom is roaring like plunk plunk, my dad is snoring like, oh, did I do it right? At night I hear my dog bark, the wind blows my swing, my dad is snoring, my mom is roaring like plunk plunk, my dad is snoring like, but, at night I hear my dog bark, the wind blows my swing, my dad is snoring, my brother, wait, oopsie. At night I hear my dog bark, the wind blows my swing, my dad is snoring, my mom is roaring like plunk plunk, my dad is snoring like, my brother is sleepwalking like, but I like those sounds.
It's a rainy Saturday afternoon in Jackson Square. Our poetry combine, Colleen Fava, Megan Volpert, Robert Bloom, and myself, are about to interview a lucky dog man. There are lots of lucky dog men in New Orleans, selling this fast food from carts shaped like humongous hot dogs. It turns out this particular dog man is named Woody LaChapelle.
I'm kind of a person that likes being out in the world and dealing with people all day long, so it's kind of a fun job for me.
But you've seen some wild stuff in the square.
Yeah, more than I really want to see sometimes.
So, hey, this is your chance to ask the lucky dog man here a question. So.
Why did you come to New Orleans in the first place?
Change of pace. I've lived most of my life in San Francisco, parts of California, and this is very similar to San Francisco.
It's all going smoothly until someone mentions poetry. What do you know? Woody writes songs and poems. He just happens to have one stashed in the lucky dog cart under the condiments shelf.
It's called Cookin'. And did you want me to read it? Okay. Well, it's actually a song lyric, but I won't sing it. It's red beans on the back stove, Mama grew some rice. Now she cleaned and cooked it, be tasting very nice. Biscuits in the oven, crawfish in the pan. Mama knows how to feed a working man. Big spoon on the table, room to lose his belt. Give him a big slice of pie.
Let's face it, everyone in New Orleans is a poet. There may be something in the thick enough to drink air, or the story-saturated Mississippi water, or maybe the lucky dogs. But the epicenter of poetic activity in this city is quite specific. It's a bar in the French Quarter called The Gold Mine. The owner, Dave Brinks, is a poet, born and raised in the Quarter. The bar, which has been in his family for generations, is really a school for poetry, known as the New Orleans School for the Imagination. The Gold Mine is where you come to hear poems, read poems, meet other poets, and learn from Dave.
Before the Gold Mine, it was called Whiskey River, and then before that, it was called Shaky Jake's, and then before that, it was called Frenchman's Creek.
Whiskey River, Shaky Jake's.
Frenchman's Creek.
Frenchman's Street.
Jeremiah's, The Hidden Door. I always had the fortune of growing up around a lot of nefarious characters in the Quarter, and just being a kid, I guess I was always hopeful that most people were like that. And then the bikers and the terrific ladies of the night. There was a woman named Dauphine Kathy. Actually, her phone was where the popcorn machine is now, and that's where she used to take her calls.
Dave tells the students they should trust their dreams. Dreams are the source of poetry. To prove it, he tells us one of his dreams.
He goes, now let's go sit in this tree. And this tree was a tree that I always sat in when I was a kid, when I didn't feel like being around other people. And so we went and sat up in this tree. And he says, now I'm going to give you this formula, which is the year in which you'll live and the year in which you'll die. And he gave me this formula, and it was something like equinox divided by cucumber equals the number. And I did it immediately. I did it on him. And it came out to be the year that he had died. And he said, no. You wouldn't want to do that on yourself, because that's too scary. He says, but you would want to do it on the people that you love, and you want to make sure that you spend time with while they're still around.
The poetry combine is feeling a bit overwhelmed after the seance at the Gold Mine, but there is still more to come. We have scheduled an interview with Gio, the queen of New Orleans burlesque.
Satire is making fun of people who are smarter than me. Irony is making fun of people who are richer than me. Burlesque is making fun of people who are smarter and richer than me while taking my clothes off.
Gio is, of course, a poet. And she has a bachelor's degree in industrial design, a master's degree in counseling, and she's president of her neighborhood citizens association. In other words, she is a model citizen of New Orleans, who happens to have invented an aggressively postmodern style of striptease.
This burlesque revival, or neo-burlesque movement, is mostly about the delicate sensibilities of the tease, a skin I can slip back into when I choose, but I would so much rather be in your face, sometimes on your face, so you can guess my weight, of course.
At one point, Gio calmly disrobes in order to display a flame-colored tattoo decorating an anatomical region that these poetry students have never seen before, at least not in public. They are totally speechless. But Gio is not a bit speechless.
Every woman's body is a dark secret place where you and I came from. Paglia says, this is the meaning of striptease, a sacred dance of pagan origins, a hazardous sphere of primitive power. I don't procreate, I create and I recreate, I sublimate, and I've been unabashedly spoiled by receiving validation in this manner.
The next morning, we get together at a French Quarter cafe to unveil our work. The poems we have somehow managed to write overnight about the people we met yesterday. Here is Megan's take on Woody the Lucky Dog Man.
In the pouring rain, in 100 copyrighted song lyrics, in 17 self-published books, in the Lucky Hot Dog Man, in the cheapest of covers, in the priceless book, in the humble, a lesson.
And Colleen.
Woody is a lucky dog man in Jackson Square. 17 books of poetry, 100 copyrighted songs, a previous incarnation in a metal punk rock band, and time on the streets. Now he stands in downpours, giving the public what they need: mystery meat on a bun and lyrics beneath the ketchup.
Well, we became more communal than I even thought. There is a giant prejudice about in poetry, and it's been there for a long time, that poets are lone creatures who, you know, suffer in privately in their, with their typewriters and their pens, you know, and this is a way to actually erase that terrible idea and do something new. As Ezra Pound said, make it new. And I think this is definitely a way to make it new.
Picture of me on the cover of On the Road results from the fact that I had just gotten down from a high mountain where I'd been for 2 months completely alone.
Hey, Jack. Hey, Jack. Is that you? This is Jan Michelle, your daughter. Remember?
The question is very silly because we should be wondering tonight, is there a world?
Hey, Jack.
But I could go and talk for 5, 10, 20 minutes about is there a world. Because there is really no world. But sometimes I'm walking on the ground and I see right through the ground. And there is no world.
I believe we met twice down in the stew pot. Yeah, it's me.
Oh, this all goes back to the inky ditties of old cartoons.
I'd like to talk to the cat that begat me.
Felix the cat with the irrational brick.
You dig?
Laurel and Hardy in the foreign region.
I heard your voice come over the line from out there in black telephone universe
and
land.
My father's wore straw hats.
And I felt like the RCA Victor dog.
And all he wanted me to do was speak out my mind against people. He sneeringly brought up Dulles, Eisenhower, the Pope,
Thomas,
all kinds of people like that. Habitually that he would stare
oh,
at
to be a gleeful mad
hates
boy.
The world he wanted. This is his idea.
Back in the mists of innocence.
That who knows, my God, but that the universe is not one vast sea of compassion, actually?
A beat still incubating in the unsullied womb of beathood. Where the only specters of doom were two bald-headed cats who, like, could push a button and blow us all out of here, man.
The essence of everything, Mama.
And now those imagined antics of Khrushchev and Ike have long since dissolved in the serum of history.
Nay, the true pure foreverhood.
Immortalized by Mad Magazine, which I used to steal from the corner candy store. H-bombs drawn in so many cartoons has become a cartoon. Or at most, the smallest measurement of nuclear firepower on Earth.
Why should I attack what I love all my life? This is deep. Live your lives out? Nah. Love your lives out.
No one seems to realize it, but I'll tell you a secret. H-bomb, I think, is the success secret of Japan. Yeah.
This is 2,500 years old. Mm-hmm.
If one of those sweet, beatitudinous babes of yore had stood up and prophesied that in 3 decades an Iranian fanatic would hold the entire publishing world hostage, if he had said that there would be Haitian drug gangs called posses in Kansas City, or condoms advertised on TV, computer viruses, hypos handed out on street corners.
It goes back to the holy old Arab. Warning the hot bloods that Ramadan is near.
If he had dared to suggest that in the late 80s,
you have to warn the hot bloods.
Soviets would be more peace-minded than the Americans, and that there would be a huge hole in the ozone from spray cans.
Why don't you come back in a million years and tell me all about it, Angel?
They would have put him in a straitjacket and carted him away to an asylum.
And our fathers wore straw hats like WC.
And there in the nut house, He might have written a monstrous work of fantasy science fiction to make George Orwell's 1984 look like The Wizard of Oz by comparison.
In fact, here is a poem I've written about Hoppo Mott.
Ah, my poor father. He's such a big baby noodle brain. Too noodle brain to exist in this world of geometric fear. Too animal saintly hooded. Was too saintly to crawl through those concrete rat mazes of tortured thought. I know. I'm the same kind of baby noodle brain, because I can feel him in my bones. I'm getting to know him. I'm getting to know little boy Blue from inside out. Racing down, down, madly southward on Madison Avenue through Manhattan today. Breezing in the cruel cold, I wrap myself up like an Arab. Blue hat and scarf like veils, and while rushing, caught a glimpse of myself in store windows. Like a mad Tuareg or Berber tribesman of the Sahara, hurtling at full tilt on a horse or maybe even a camel. Turquoise shrouds and veils flapping in the hot desert wind, only this was cold city wind here on the other side of the Atlantic, which reminded me of an ancient sunken home of continental driftwood, continental breakfast hood.
Walking, talking, poetry in the streets, walking, talking, God in the streets.
Ah, oh, we humans must be a pretty hardy lot to swarm all over this poor old globe time after time, strong as dynasties of cockroaches in those tenements I used to live in. Remember, Jack, you came to visit me in a tenement? I bet you didn't see any cockroaches. No, you were too drunk. Well, never mind. Anyway, so you say all your fathers wore straw hats like W.C. Fields. Well, I wish I could say that, but you see, my father was the invisible man. But I won't hold that against you.
You're not listening. The poem goes, Love's multitudinous boneyard of decay. The spilled milk of heroes. Destruction of silk kerchiefs. By dust storm. The rest of heroes blindfolded ghosts. Murder victims admitted beast by them. Skeletons bartering fingers and joints. Quivering meat of the elephant's kindness being torn apart from the blood. Deceptions of delicate kneecaps. Fear of rats dripping with back on the area.
Is that you?
Poet, professor in autumn years, seeks helpmate, companion, protector, friend, young lover with empty, compassionate soul, athletic physique and boundless mind, courageous warrior who may also like women and girls, no problem, to share bed, meditation, apartment, Lower East Side, help inspire mankind conquer world, anger, and guilt, empowered by Whitman, Blake, Rimbaud, Ma Rainey, and Vivaldi. Familiar, respecting art's primordial majesty. Priapic, carefree, playful, harmless, slave or master. Mortally tender, passing swift time. Photographer, musician, painter, poet, yuppie, or scholar. Find me here in New York, alone, with the alone. Going to Lady Psychiatrist, who says, make time in your life for someone you can call darling, honey, who holds you dear. Can get excited and lay his head on your heart in peace.
I have lived by the grace of Jews and girls.
Oh, that's a funny one.
I have nothing and am not wanting. I write poems from the spirit for the spirit and have everything. A poet's fate is by choice. I have chosen and am well pleased. A drunk dreamer in reality is an awful contradiction. Loved ones fall away from me, and I am become wanting. Self-diagnosis. A penniless living legend needs get the monies or write more poems or both. If you have a choice between two things and cannot decide, take both.
Take both.
'Tis not right for me to be wanting. I take out my pen, I pee white gold, and on the wall I write thereon. It was there, always there, minutely contained in a splayed hand. Outside, a fallen swallow marks the Tuesday. Oh, my heart. Finally, at long last, I am at peace. The half-century war I hacked at like an Afric bushman hacking bushmasters is over. I will live and never know my death.
Yeah.
Teddy bear, turn around. Teddy bear, touch the ground. Teddy bear, turn your shoe. Teddy bear.
What else? Goes to school. I made that up.
Letter to my friend Bob in New York. You don't sound so good. Please take care. Most of this is mental. That's why it's terrorism. It's meant to disconcert and make you revert to blind fear. Poetry is wanted here. And to boot, our homegrown nuts are starting to take root. Yet in most parts, things are calm and generally subdued. But there have been hoaxes and folkses getting anxious and ready to conclude that it's hopeless and drear. Poetry would be helpful here. So I'm gonna go poetize and help people realize that you cannot hide when worlds collide. No going inside, no taking a breather either. It all comes in on you at once, and you gotta have at least an ounce of hope and joy to deploy into the atmosphere of fear to implode the load of grief that's drawing near. Poetry is desired here. 'Cause all peoples are just like you are and I are, close or far are, just people with nowhere to run. Let's stick a flower into every gun, like way back when. Or was that a dream? Can't say now, feeling so low, seeing so bleak, thinking so drear. Poetry is wanted here. Rhyming and timing, a rebirth of cheer. Songs are needed here. It hit the fan and bam! We are human, after all. America, venerable yet vulnerable, and human, after all. Good to know, that's our true strength, and the real meaning of this happenstance, that we can fall and scroll and rise and be surprised and not take for granted the morning sun, so beautiful and dear. Poetry would be good here. Forgive me for ranting, for panting, for chanting out of tune. That's the fool in me, seeking a tune in me, wanting to stay light and free from that which would oppress, depress, regress, obsess, and in general make a mess of my soul. I want to be whole, in control, on a roll, without the slightest hint of fear. Poetry is needed here. So, my dear friend, hang in, hang on, hang tight. We gotta see this to the end. We gotta be concerned and discern the real enemy that we fight. For the veil between truth and lie is become so thin and sheer. Poetry is wanted here. Love, your buddy.
You heard Alex Calguero's Poetry is Wanted Here. Allen Ginsberg's Personals ad is from the collection The United States of Poetry, as was The Things I Hear at Night by that young man, Sawyer Schacht. And those found poems, The Soldier's Drill and The Double Dutch Rhymes, were also after United States of Poetry. The New Orleans Poetry Combine story was produced by Larry Massey. Marianne Faithful read Gregory Corso's Getting to the Poem. And that was Jan Kerouac reading her poem over her father Jack's voice. The mix was by Marjorie von Halteren. You're hiding something sweet.
give it to me, yeah. To me, whoa, oh, talk to me some more. You don't have to go. You're the poetry man. You make things alright.
This is from an unmarked reel-to-reel tape bought in a Brooklyn junk shop.
Ooh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Ooh, yeah.
It comes to us from the professor at the WFMU's Audio Kitchen.
You are a genie. All I ask for is your smile each time I run away. When I am with you, I have a giggling teenage crush, and now I'm such a man, yeah, such a man. Whoa, oh, talk to me some more. You don't have to go. You're the poetry man.
Phoebe Snow and an unidentified young girl singing Poetry Man. I'm Andrei Codrescu of The Exquisite Corpse, a journal of letters and life at corpse.org. There are links to works by all the poets and producers in this hour at hearingvoices.com. Hearing Voices specials are supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and by the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art. Mix engineer is Robin Wise of soundimagery.com. Executive producer is Barrett Golden.
From NPR, National Public Radio, this is HearingVoices.com.